Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Dravenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here with Blake Morgan, owner of Morgan's in South Whitehall Township, just north of Parkland High School. Blake, thanks for joining us here on WDIY.
Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So we're going to be spending most of our time today talking about the restaurant restrictions in PA amid the coronavirus pandemic. But just for some context, Blake, can you tell us a little bit about Morgan's for those who aren't familiar with it?
Sure. Morgan's is a full-service restaurant. We're located just past Parkland High School in South Whitehall Township, as you said. We've been here since 2005. We serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We serve breakfast Monday through Saturday, 8 to 11. Lunch and dinner, 11:30 until 8, Monday through Saturday as well.
And just for, I guess, complete transparency, Blake and I did work together back in the early 90s. I had the pleasure of serving a lot of his food, everything from the Louisiana Sizzler to salmon au fromage, right?
That's true. And our all-time favorite, Southern Peach Chicken.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So we are recording this on August 17th. And as of today, Blake, what are the restrictions that are in place right now here in Pennsylvania?
Well, gatherings are limited to 25 for a common event inside, 250 outside, and we're limited to 25% of building occupancy, and that number includes our employees as well. So it's been a pretty hard hit for restaurants to try to survive on 75% less potential revenue, and as it would be for any business.
So with a place like Morgan's, what is your general capacity, and then what is that limited to now?
Well, you know, we're trying to seat no more than 25 at a time inside. We're going below it, and that gives us some room in case somebody shows up unexpectedly. So, you know, for us, on a normal Friday night, we would book 100 reservations, or Saturday, we would book 100 reservations. Now we're booking 25. Outside, we're not limited, so we can do a little bit out there, but that's so weather-driven and temperature and rain and all those things. So you really can't. It's not as secure a reservation as inside would be.
Well, and also not every restaurant or establishment has place to do outside. Either they don't have the space or it might eat into some of their parking, right?
100%. And we're very well set up to do outside, and we're easy access to go. And we have a lot of things working for us up here that a lot of my friends don't. And it doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the establishment. It just has to do with how you're set up. And for all these little things that you're allowed to do, some restaurants are set up very well to take at least some advantage of them, even though they're not close to what we should be doing. But some restaurants are not set up very well to do that. And that's who I'm really advocating for in some of the things that I've reached out to local legislatures for.
And do you have an idea of how that 25% figure was developed?
Not at all. We were told 50%. We could do, and a lot of restaurants spent thousands of dollars updating, putting plexiglass up, making sure their safety formats are in place, making sure their employees are trained, and then 7 days later it changed. So I think the problem that most restaurants have is we're in this broad brushstroke lumped in with non-compliant bars, tourist areas, places with high spikes in cases, and you know, white table restaurants that are separated, six tables are separated 6 feet apart, that are operating at 50% capacity, it was deemed safe, and then 7 days later, all of a sudden, it's not. So I think that's an issue for a lot of people as well.
Well, I think to your point with nicer restaurants, I know, you know, early on in the pandemic, everyone was pushing take home or takeaway. And I look at it that to me, it's an option, but it's certainly not a solution for all restaurants. I think, you know, some food is fine for takeaway, but my experience is that maybe the nicer foods don't travel as well as maybe like a falafel or a burrito.
Sure. All food is better in-house, and no matter what you'd get to go, it's just not the same. And yeah, you're 100% right. There are levels of that where some can be still good to very good, but it's just not the same quality. It's not as hot, you know, so while our customers in every restaurant I've spoken to, 25 of them that I speak to on a regular basis, can't say enough thank yous to their customers and how much we appreciate their being able to pivot along with us and coming and getting to go and getting drinks to go and eating outside and doing all those things, all our customers have been wonderful, and I know every restaurant owner and chef would like to say thank you to them. All we're asking is to allow us to serve a larger percentage of those safely, at their discretion, allow them to exercise their choice, to trust us to keep them safe and to come and dine in. And that's all we're asking.
And, Blake, what do you think is that balance between public safety and sustainable business operations? Certainly, it doesn't seem like it's 25%. Is it 50%? Is it really kind of depend on the restaurant? Kind of what are you looking to achieve?
Well, I think it's all those things. I think it depends on the restaurant. I think non-compliant restaurants should be fined and they should be dealt with. Compliant restaurants should be encouraged to continue to grow their business, not just from a standpoint of doing what's right. You can ask any business to reduce their revenue by 75% and expect them to survive. But just on the standpoint of saying, hey, let's have some dialogue. What do we need to do? And a lot of times the restaurants are finding out on TV. There's no notification. There's no clarification. Hey, this is just what it's going to be. And I think we need to get some dialogue and get some understanding on what the different types of places are, what are the highest incidences of spikes. And I know they're in bars. I know that, non-compliant bars. It's just the way that the disease transmits. But how can we protect the public? And how can we protect that financial line to an industry that does $24 billion annually in sales in the state of Pennsylvania, and also collects $1 billion in revenue for the state, and purchases almost $1.5 billion in alcohol from the most profitable venture the state has, from the Liquor Control Board. So, you know, it's a financial reason. It's a personal reason. You want restaurants in their communities to continue to do well. There's so much out there to keep us working together, and it just seems very one-sided. It seems like an edict is passed. There's no cooperation. There's no understanding. This is just the way it is, and you have to deal with it. And I think that's sad, you know.
Well, let's kind of put this into perspective a little bit too, Blake, with restaurant financials. You know, if you're at 25% capacity and maybe a little bit more outside, it's not as if you can cut your expenses 75% and still make a profit, right?
Exactly right. You're exactly right. And even just losing, you know, the alcohol sales of that, the most profitable for a while with to-go, we can even sell those. So absolutely, I don't want to throw a number out there, but each percentage that it increases from 25 gives us a better chance, and I think that's the best way to say it. You know, initially 50%, everybody geared towards that. Let's see how that works, and try our best to make it work. Restaurants have done an unbelievable job pivoting, staying flexible, supporting their community, trying to keep you safe. It's not like we're enemies, but it seems in the negotiations and the explanations sometimes there's a stance of, no, you're the enemy, and I don't think that's right. You know, I think we should talk, and how do we keep small business afloat, and what can we do, and how can we help? If we can't do this, let's try this. But there just isn't that. It's just like, no, you're not opening, and that's it. And that's sad.
Well, I think really at risk here are the, you know, smaller locally owned establishments. I mean, the regional or national chains have more tools in their toolkit when it comes to financing and lines of credit or areas that they can cut back. And maybe the pain is spread across different locations in different states that have different, an entire network of locations, where really we're talking about the survival of, you know, those independent restaurants that are the backbone of the community.
No question. You're talking about just industry-wide, they're predicting 30% will close, which will mean about 7,000 restaurants. The large portion of those are independents. And if you're looking at 7,000 restaurants closing, you're looking at 180,000 jobs. So, and not only that, but the involvement in the community. Many of these restaurants donate to soup kitchens. They're active in their community, hosting events. And, you know, we take the social element out, but where are people going to go when we can all get together again? It's such an important part of our community. Go out to dinner or breakfast, lunch, enjoy time with your social groups and those kind of things. It's important to our society and the fabric of our society. Restaurants play a big role. So we should be very concerned about how we're going to keep them afloat. We should be working around the clock to do that, and I don't get the sense that that's the case. And I would love to be part of that, and I'd love to not get A and settle for B, and I'd love to be part of that. All my friends would love to be part of that. I'd love to explain the differences and the places and the risk and understand that and come up with some kind of tangible thing we can begin to work to. Let's start working months ahead instead of getting a notice 7 days later, everything's going to change, or on a 24-hour basis. Let's give us some realistic goals we can work to attain, and we'll work towards those, you know.
Now, Blake, has there been some funding or some support either from the like the PPP at the federal level, or well, anything on the state or local level that restaurants have been able to benefit from?
Yeah, absolutely. People have applied for the PPP, but when that first came out and restaurants jumped on it because they were impacted so greatly, 70% of it went to payroll, so it was like a transfer of the unemployment. So it did help, there's no question, but it allowed you to pay your employees and keep people on staff, but it didn't really meet the meat and potato expenses of the business compared to the lack of revenue that you had. So it was helpful. It was great to sustain people. There's been grants that have been around, but they're for businesses that do. There's cash restrictions on those,
right.
Revenue restrictions. So a lot of people didn't meet those, and they dried up very quickly in Northampton and Lehigh County. The Chamber of Commerce has been tremendous trying to help people and all, you know, in every avenue. But there's just not enough help out there. There needs to be more done for an industry that's been impacted arguably more than any industry, if you discount the cruise industry and maybe the hotel industry. But this industry in Pennsylvania has been wailed on. And I'd like to see more, like, just understanding that. Even if we all agree on the safety aspect of it, of why it was done, there could certainly be more compassion and more concentration on how can we get these people some funds so that down the line we can continue to collect $80 million in revenue that restaurants collect for us. You know, from a fiscal standpoint, we have to keep restaurants afloat because they're not going to be replaced immediately. You know, so from fiscally, personally, community-wise, there's so many reasons to really be invested in making sure restaurants make it and not just wishing them the best. And here's your cut and good luck. I just think we could get more than that.
So Blake, we certainly read about, you know, a couple places here and there that are closing. I mean, where are we right now, and how many restaurants are going to start, you know, failing here with this 25% requirement?
I think September is going to be a really crucial month if they don't do something right away. I mean, I've talked to operators that operate high-end restaurants to sandwich shops, and some are on life support, Michael, and some are in critical condition. Some are know that they're headed that way. And again, removing the outside, that's going to have an unbelievable impact if we can't get some sustainable numbers inside. So I would say my predictions are a little higher than the National Restaurant Association in Pennsylvania at 7,000. I say it's going to be a little higher than that, and especially if we don't get something going as quickly as possible.
Well, Blake, I certainly wish you and all your colleagues out there the best of luck that we can find some sort of resolution. I mean, this whole show is about talking about the local food scene, and we all depend on you for being out there. So I wish you all the best.
Well, thank you so much, Mike.
And thanks for joining us here on WDIY. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.